Hey, everybody, welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Grow Yourself, where we dive deep into the art and science of personal growth. And our mission is simple. It's to invite guests, experts to come and talk about all aspects of personal and professional growth, and hopefully for the purpose of helping us learn, grow, and change. So in today's episode, we will dive into the conversation about living genuinely or authentically in a world that often demands conformity. And I'm thrilled to have as my guest, Dr. Vanessa Roberts, as our special guest. Dr. Roberts is not just an expert in the field. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's a celebrated author and a respected professor. And with her private practice in Sacramento, she blends these unique, this sort of unique professional insight together and her personal compassion and passion for the work to help individuals and couples. So today we'll explore intricate issues of shame, self-worth, but primarily authenticity. It's a question that I've been asked many times, and I'm going to pose this question to her because she speaks on it, and because I've heard people talk about it, and I would hear people from the stage even say this. They would say, be your authentic self. And I almost want to raise my hand and say, excuse me, I just have one question. What if your authentic self sucks? Then what? What do you do then? I'm going to ask her about that question. And so we're going to dive into these areas with Dr. Roberts, who is really dedicated to helping people to confront and overcome these challenges of shame. And again, you know, sort of recognizing their inherent health. And as she says, break free from the weight of external expectations. Vanessa has two books. The first one is called Authentic, and the subtitle is Revealing the Layers That Can Enhance Our Authenticity. And also her more recent book, I think from 2021, The Pursuit Toward Liberation, A Society That Shackles and Stories That Liberate. I love that idea. So now join us in this really, I think it's going to be an enlightening conversation as we uncover the importance of authenticity in our lives, you know, guided by the expertise and the experiences of Dr. Vanessa Roberts. Vanessa, thank you so much for being with us here on Grow Yourself.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's so good to be here with you and to speak with you again. And thank you for that introduction. I sounded much better on that than
the only problem with that is that, again, you had me on your podcast some months ago, and I already know your awesomeness. So I stand by my words.
Thank you.
Well, listen, so you're coming to us here today from Sacramento, California, right? We call it SAC. I used to live up in that area when I was in the Air Force. But Vanessa, before we get started, would you just tell our audience a little bit about, you know, who is Vanessa Roberts, you know, and what you do, maybe even a little bit about where you were brought up, anything that to just let us understand who Vanessa is.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, from California, I've been here all my life, minus the 2 years I did undergrad in Texas. So now Texas is a little bit of second home for me, but I grew up in the Bay Area, now in Sacramento. So I've been out here since my graduate school experience and just kind of stayed around, never left. But I do have a private practice out here. I'm actually a professor in the Bay Area at St. Mary's College.
Very nice.
You mentioned the podcast, and yes, the podcast is All Things Authentic. So obviously that just hits on this concept of authenticity. I've been in the field, a little over 10 years now, surprisingly. And I've always wanted to just find fulfillment in the work that I do. And being a therapist and also a professor, it's really provided that for me to be able to help individuals and also help couples. And I know I can't really save the world. We wish we could, but it makes a difference to feel like we're having some small impact in the lives of others. And what I started to realize in my work, but also in my own personal journey, was this, I guess this attachment to like shame, self-worth, authenticity. In my graduate school experience, you know, I was kind of introduced to Brené Brown's work. Mm. She has some amazing work around shame. Mm. And it was interesting because that really started to name a lot of things for me. Being in graduate school in that doctorate program, it was just these heightened feelings. You know, I felt a lot of pressure, expectations to pass this part, fail this part. And I wasn't understanding why these things were so detrimental to me, right? I'm going through the normal process of, you know, some things you're just not going to pass. You redo it. It's normal. But mm-hmm. I was feeling these intense feelings of like, oh my God, like I'm not smart enough. I'm the mm-hmm. worst student. And it wasn't until reading some of Brené Brown's work where I was like, oh, this is what that is. Like there's a name to this now. And so over those years, you know, I read some of her books and really just went on my own personal journey, really exploring my own self-worth, feelings of shame. And so that's what kind of got me into doing some of my own research around that and engaging in some of that work with my clients. And why it's important in my practice is because, you know, I work with all type of like mental health issues, depression, anxiety, couples come in for like communication, infidelity. It's like all these different issues come up. And what I started to realize is it doesn't matter the age of someone, gender, sexual orientation, ethnicity, like across the board, a lot of us are struggling with this deep-rooted sense of questioning our sense of self, questioning our self-worth, and some intense feelings of shame that a lot of us, like me, don't really have a name for and don't really even know it's a problem in our life. And of course, all those things impact our authenticity. And so I think that's what's so valuable about those, I call them the passion areas for me, some of the specialties, because it's just across the board, right? It doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, what you're going through. A lot of those things are just deep rooted for a lot of us.
You know, that's fascinating. Honestly, I love the way that you put this because one of the things that surprises me sometimes, you know, in my work as a coach, and particularly if I'm doing workshops, and I might start off a workshop by, you know, asking a question that has something to do with that, let's say reveals a, you know, a personal problem, not a personal problem, but maybe a problem they're having. And, you know, I'm surprised by how many people after I go through that sort of brief thing of asking everybody, you know, what burdens you today in your work? How somebody will inevitably say, you know, I'm talking 2023, by the way, where they would say, I literally thought I was the only one with these problems. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everybody's having problems mm-hmm. in some form or fashion, right? And we interpret the problems. You know, I might look at your problem and think, huh, you know, that's not a problem. Yeah, I got some problems, right? So how do you reconcile that with yourself that, you know, or reconcile that whole issue that sometimes we think we're the only one walking around with problems.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And I'll literally get clients that come in, maybe it's like first session, and they'll say, you know, this is kind of what I'm going through. But like, you know, I don't really want to waste your time with this. I know other people have bigger problems. And I always have to, you know, let's pause for a second. You're here for a reason, right? And mm-hmm. can we honor our own experience? Can we honor mm-hmm. what's difficult for us? It's easy to want to kind of peep into other people's windows and take a look at their problems, but then we use that to minimize our own. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what would it look like just to honor your mm-hmm. experience, right? Honor what you're going through. Yeah, it's easy to say a lot of individuals are going through some difficult things. And, right, it's not the but, it's not, but, you know, other people have it worse. I think we do that to kind of reframe, to almost have this gratitude, which we want that gratitude.
Yes.
But how can we exhibit gratitude without minimizing? You're struggling with some things, right?
Wow.
So it's like that thought of, man, I'm sure other people have it worse. They're probably going through so much. And also what I'm going through is still difficult. And also, I'm impacted by this. And maybe you're not sure why you're impacted as much as you would expect. But let's explore that. Let's hold space for it still. But what most of us tend to do is that concept of compartmentalizing, right? Of like, other people have worse issues. Let me just put this on the back burner. That's not very helpful either, right? Because soon that starts to build up.
No, that's a great thought that you have there. And because you were just making me think, well, you know, start off with the idea that you're here for a reason, mm-hmm. you see. And so why do we even need to qualify or quantify or measure our problem rather than we have a problem, I have a problem, I'm here to resolve the problem. Comparing my problem to someone else does nothing, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm with you. I sometimes do default to this notion of, well, yeah, it could be a lot worse. I know other people have a lot worse problems, but that doesn't take care of my problem.
Yeah,
that definitely. Empathy or whatever the case might be. Vanessa, so I have a question though about when you first start speaking with people and, you know, providing therapy and counseling someone, you know, when you first come upon them, does it take a minute to break through perhaps maybe even the ego for them to start to really open up to you, and you start off with what seems to be a smaller problem, and as you go along and they get more comfortable, you and maybe them realize it's a bigger problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting question. And that's been an interesting journey because it's actually kind of been a mixed bag with that. I've had individuals, first session, they're coming in, they know what they want, they know what they want to discuss, they're laying it all on the table already. Mm-hmm. And it could depend on previous experience, right? Some individuals have been to therapy before, they kind of know how it goes, maybe not as anxiety provoking. And then I've had some individuals where you can tell they are holding back, even if it's holding back emotions, right? Like they have to, right? We speak about that authenticity. They almost feel like, yeah, I can't quite break this shell yet. And it's understandable. It's a stranger. And I usually validate that and name that of like, you know, I completely understand you wanting to hold back. It's anxiety provoking. Like, and I always kind of add the humor of, you know, if you think about it, I'm literally a stranger to you. Like, how strange is that you're coming to talk to a stranger and share all these things, just to normalize, like, yeah, this is uncomfortable. And then I've had some individuals who I've maybe been working with some months, and, you know, in my perception, they're being open, sharing things. And a few months later, they're like, okay, now I finally feel open enough to share this thing I've been holding back. And it's like a monumental thing.
Wow.
It's like, where did this come from? And so that kind of just speaks to the journey of everyone. Some people are able to be more open right off the bat, some more slow to the process, and some need a few months, right? And so it's just my job to try to make it the most comfortable environment and atmosphere for individuals, and trying to find that like safety for them, non-judgmental, right? And so I feel a lot of my job is just to create that space for individuals to be able to hold that space.
And before we get into authenticity, I do have one more question sort of about your role as you just mentioned it. What is the role of a therapist? How do you see that other than, as you just mentioned, sort of, you know, creating this, you know, a moment, a place and time where people can speak or feel comfortable to speak? What else would you say is your role as a therapist? What's your responsibility to the patient, if you want to put it that way, or the client?
Yeah. And it might look different. Some therapists might answer this differently. It kind of depends on what their approach is. So, but for my approach, you know, I'm very client-centered, strength-based, and really strive to provide a more liberating form of the help that we provide. Versus, you know, also that's part of my second book, a lot of work on just how society kind of puts these shackles, these systems, and things are kind of just oppressive to a lot of individuals. And unfortunately, therapy sometimes falls into that of like, this is what therapy is. And we were trained years and years ago where the therapist is just a blank slate, robotic, right? Don't show any emotion. And it's just like, who wants to come talk to that, right? Like, that's not creating a comfortable environment. So So I operate from more of this liberating force. And what I describe to clients is, even on the consultation of, you know, my role for you is kind of that co-pilot, kind of the co-driver, like, this is still your life, and so I'm putting you in the driver's seat still.
Very interesting.
If we're authoring this book, the story of your life. I can help be a co-author for you, but I want to be a small part of that story. One, what that does is put them more in control, right? It's more liberating of like, yes, I got this, and you're here to like assist me. I'm not there to tell you what to do. I can't give advice. But I'm really there to guide you to be a little more introspective, to think about questions that you haven't been asked before, nor have you had time to think about before. I'm there to challenge you to, well, hey, this behavior, it seems like it's causing some issues for you. This next week, let's try to do something different. And I'm not there to force you to do it. Again, it's your journey, right? So I'm just giving a suggestion. But when you come back next week and say, oh, I didn't do it yet, and all these problems occurred because of it, well, let's discuss what's preventing you from partaking in these suggestions, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not a lot of people think like, I don't need someone telling me what to do. No, that's not the role I'm there for.
Right.
Let's rewrite this story together. And then my ultimate goal is why I take that approach is at some point, I'm hoping that you feel empowered enough to realize that, yeah, I don't need you anymore.
Oh, how right? Interesting.
Uh-huh. And some people do some long-term therapy.
Yeah.
My ultimate goal is to get clients to a place where I don't need you. And if you look yeah. back on this journey, I hope you realize that I only did a small portion. A lot of clients will say, no, you helped a lot, but I always try to almost minimize what I do. That's the strength-based approach of I only did a little bit. Like you did all the work outside of therapy, right? So that's the approach I take.
That's fascinating. I really love the way that you put that, and so, beyond, setting up a scenario where they don't feel like they need your guidance anymore, what are clients, what are they attempting to do sort of generally speaking, with therapy? Or, what is the outcome? I would imagine many come in and they don't know what the outcome is. So then what is the outcome that you would say, generally speaking, clients are looking for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, some, like you said, don't know. Sometimes I'll ask that question of, if therapy is, well, when therapy is beneficial for you, sometime hopefully in the near future, what will that look like?
Mm.
That starts to give them that visualization of like, yes, this would be different. This would be different. Some can name it easily. Some, like you're alluding to, it's like, I have no idea. I just feel I need to come to talk, right? And sometimes that's all it is, mm-hmm. is an outlet. I have no one in my life to be like unbiased, right? Where I can really share some of these feelings. So sometimes that can be the outcome, just exploring that vulnerability. And then the first thought that kind of popped in my head, it's almost this idea of like the past, present, and future. And so it could be all three of those things, or some people are really just exploring one
I
aspect.
See.
So, the past just comes up a lot because I'm exploring a lot of like childhood issues, family dynamics, past trauma, some of these things we just haven't processed through. So sometimes the outcome can be really just doing that trauma work to process some of this. And then that impacts the present, right? A lot of people have the outcome of just truly present moment issues. I'm stressed at work. I'm stressed with family. I'm stressed in my relationship. So that's all in the present moment. And we just need some solutions to how do we deal with this in the present moment. And then sometimes that outcome can be a little more future oriented. And once we get to that place, that's when you kind of know that, okay, I think you can do this on your own. Because once you get to that place of focusing on the future, it's not more so of taking you out of the present. It's just the realization that if something comes up like this in the future, because it probably will, right? Therapy mm-hmm. doesn't now take away all the stressors that we have. But now I feel more equipped to handle this. Now in the future, I can remember, what was that question? Okay, I need to ask myself that question.
Wow.
What was the behavior I worked? Yes, let me start setting boundaries in the future. So some of these things can be a little mitigated going forward. So
You know, I think that would be very empowering for me, or very insightful, very powerful for me to come to a therapist like you and realize within the first couple of sessions or so that you're going to help me develop some tools, you see, because you're right, that the problems aren't just automatically going to go away, but now I have some different tools about, you know, whether it be just reframing an issue or whatever the case might be. I feel like, you know, I can apply something to it as opposed to just go, what the hell's going on here in my life, you know, and having no answers except grief or pain or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
So, wow, that's fascinating. I think all of what you said is so helpful to even our viewers, that if they're thinking about counseling or therapy or something like this, to think through some of the ideas that you just put forth about, you know, how to be a client and maybe how, what to expect and, you know, and so forth. So, well, listen, let me ask you about authenticity. It's it is a tricky question, and I'm very sincere about this idea that I have listened to people say this. And my first thought is, you know, because I'm a coach, I run into people who feel like they're authentic, you know, well, it's some of them actually do kind of suck as human beings, if I may be crass about it. That's probably not the right thing to say as a coach. Let me see if I can rephrase that, you know. I mean, you know, now and then, I'll give you an example. I coached an executive, it's probably been 10 years or more. And one of the first things we did is a 360. And I went out to ask his fellow executives and others around him, really his 360, you know, about, you know, my 360s are simple. You know, what are they good at? You know, what are they weak at? What do they need help with? You know, what are their blind spots? And, you know, if you were their personal advisor, what's one piece of advice you would give them that would help? That's my 360. I called this one executive up and I talked to the person and I said, you know, I'll just use the name, you know, Joe, I'm working with Joe, wanted to get some feedback from you. And I just want to ask you a few questions. And they said, fine, no problem. I said, my first question is, you know, what is Joe really good at? And his answer is, I'm going to give it to you verbatim. He said, I've worked with Joe for 3 years and I can't think of a single thing that he's good at. Mm. That was hard to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, but as I got to know this person, he was very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Very difficult and very in your face and very crass and very... you know, and so I would submit to you that he believed this was his authentic self. This is who he was. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fair to say that he, you know, a lot of people thought he sucked, mm-hmm. and that you need to change who you are. Mm-hmm. Then what?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yes.
I'm really putting you on the spot, but let me maybe back up and go ahead if you want. I mean, it's a tough.
I almost have too many thoughts.
Oh, good.
So let's see, where to start? So, okay, on one hand, seeing it in other people. Okay, so seeing that this person just doesn't show up how I would want them to, right? To be fair, right. Not a good person. So, one, it's a reminder that to be our authentic self, right? So when we talk about authenticity, right, it's, yeah, being real, genuine, those are some things that we kind of hear a lot. A definition I like that I saw, it's being what is claimed to be. And so I'll ask the question of, like, what you're putting out, what you're claiming to be. A lot of us are claiming to be a lot of things on social media, but is that authentic to who we are? And sometimes it is, so for individuals like Joe. But what's important for individuals to remember, and probably for Joe also, yes, we can be our authentic self, but it also requires some thoughtfulness and some empathy. And that gets tricky for individuals, because the authenticity doesn't 100% mean, like, yeah, this is who I am, take me or leave me. It's like, well, possibly who you are and how you're showing up actually impacts your relationships, right? Like, it actually impacts others. And so Yes, we want this authentic version, but I also want you to start realizing that parts of your authentic version might not mesh with your relationships. Is that an issue for you? Joe might say, nope, relationships are fine. Okay, that's okay. So you're truly being your authentic self with the risk of it might rub some people the wrong way. So that's kind of up for Joe to do that work or not of like, when I look in the mirror, am I pleased with this person? Am I pleased with the impact that I'm having on others? And, you know, this is not saying Joe would fit into this, but there is like a super small percentage of individuals who aren't able to look in the mirror and say that, right? And we're talking about individuals with like some personality disorders, but that's like a very small percent. So could be Joe, who knows? But he would have to look himself in the mirror and ask that question. Now, another thought that came up too, when you kind of asked that question of, you know, my authentic self sucks, I would ask people why, right? Outside of Joe's case, where it's like, clearly you're having some issues connecting with people. So that's separate. But for people to just feel that personally of like, I don't like my authentic self.
Yes.
That almost takes us to that feeling of shame.
Yes.
Why? And it probably could be tied to, I just don't feel like I'm enough. I feel like people won't accept my authentic self. If I show that, and that's that exposure, it's vulnerable, people will reject me. Because in the past, I've gotten rejected. And so I would challenge that of, I don't know if your authentic self sucks. I just don't know if you've accepted truly who you are because of that shame that's attached to it. You feeling like your authentic self isn't enough.
Right? And maybe I'll leave it there. No, that's very interesting what you're saying there, because as you were describing this idea, you know, and I was thinking about Joe, which is obviously not his real name. You know, there are other values at play here, and you brought up one of them. You know, essentially you were asking, you know, how's that working out for you? Mm-hmm. You know, because he was under real fire from a lot of people, and so yeah, you can claim, hey, this is, and I've heard this a lot from people. You know, it's just the way I am. You know, if you don't like it, you know, and. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if that's a real character based. I mean, we were brought into this earth, in my way of thinking, to build relations, to have relationships. And if you're just going to play off that, hey, it's just the way that I am. If you don't like me, that's your problem. Mm-hmm. That competes with other, with morals and good relationships and all these other sorts of things. But you're right. If we're talking about, you know, how we feel about ourselves, I think that, you know, sometimes, and I'm asking the question really, you know, do people, you know, they had a life, let's say for 5 or 10 years that really didn't go well. They made some changes. Their life has improved. Their peers are different now. But in their mind, they're still, maybe even subconsciously, I mean, living that old life, and they feel that shame, even though they've made the change. Is that, can that be accurate way of looking at the scenario?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of us are operating off of some core belief and some running narrative or script, right? And a lot of that starts very early on, maybe upbringing, childhood. We start to learn through our family dynamics, things that have occurred to us, and even dynamics at school, peers, and things like that. Mm-hmm. One, we start to create this sense of who we are, right? If we feel that sense of love, belonging, and safety that we need, a lot of individuals don't. And so then we start to have this script going in our head and kind of this core belief. Unfortunately, most of us have this core belief of I'm just not enough, right? That's where that shame mm-hmm. comes in. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. People don't like me. I'll never get A, B, and C. It's a core belief we have. And then we have this running narrative in our head, consciously, but a lot of times unconsciously, trying to reinforce that for us in any setting that we enter of like, Remember, but you're not enough. Remember, you're not enough. Oh, you want to go for that job? Why? Remember, you're not enough. And so even if things start to shift for us of like, I found this amazing person. Now I'm, you know, have this great life, have these amazing kids. I'm a great parent. I have this great social circle. All these things have started to challenge that narrative. And so it can help a little, but sometimes that voice still creeps up in that script of, and you're still not enough at times, right?
Wow.
And we actually search for evidence unconsciously of why that's true, right? We don't focus on like, oh, but remember you got this promotion. This person praised you on this. We focus on that one time a stranger maybe rolled their eyes at us. We don't even know the person, right?
Yeah, they might have had something in their eye, you know.
It triggers that thought again of like, see, I knew people didn't like me. See, I knew I'm not approachable. Right?
And so yes, definitely. And a person like that, can they spiral back sort of out of control? I mean, whatever that means, it doesn't have to mean that they go lose their minds or anything like that. But somehow they start attacking themselves and you know, reverting back to an older self.
Yeah, feeding back into those narratives, right? You would hope if they get to a place where they've been able to work through some of that, maybe it's actually in therapy, or maybe it's just life has transformed for them, which has been healing on its own. So you would hope there's enough kind of like protective factors to remind them that like, no, we're not going back to that version of self. Like some things have just triggered me, but like, again, remember that future orientation of like, what did I do to get to this place? Like, let's keep focusing on that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Ernesto, what are some of the key challenges for people, you know, achieving authenticity or living authentically? What are the challenges that you see that people come across the most?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's difficult to attribute it all to society, but just in my framework, a lot of the work that I do, you know, just more social justice oriented, I'm really big on deconstructing society systems. I am a pretty big firm believer that's a huge percentage of it, right?
Really?
If we lived in this society that's a little more liberating, non-oppressive to individuals, we didn't have all this comparison. I mean, social media doesn't help either.
No.
So that's a huge factor. But all this comparison, but when you think about it, that's how our society has been conditioned. We live in this very capitalistic, individualistic society. So it's like, well, what else is going to be the outcome of that, right? It's competitive. Now we're comparing ourselves to others. We fear rejection. We fear not belonging in this society. A lot of individuals feel like they don't belong in society for various reasons, right? If you're thinking about gender, sexual orientation, ethnicity, that's even more layered of barriers of like, how, because of how I look, I already don't feel safe in society. So now you're telling me to be my authentic self? No, thanks. I don't feel safe doing that. Because in the past, there's been consequences to that. Right? So many layers to that. But I do attribute it to kind of this society, the conditioning. And because of that conditioning, that creates a narrative for us, right? And I'll even use myself, right? I fall into that, like, almost this condition of perfectionism, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what was getting me tripped up in grad school. Like, I have to be perfect. I have to be perfect. And a lot of us have that script due to just these demands in society. And it threatens our worth and that authenticity, right? And so a lot of different layers to that, but society and the systems and the pressures, expectations, it doesn't make it easy.
But that's a big mountain to climb. You know, if you feel like that you are not perfect enough because you're comparing yourself to society, you know, one, is it really society's fault? You know, I look at, you know, in today's time there, you know, and you're right, social media, there's so many, you know, there are people, and I'm not making a joke out of it, but it's become I don't know how serious it is. I don't think you can look at social media and determine that we're having a societal problem, But I've seen, you know, some videos where, you know, somebody is professing to be a dog or a wolf or a cat. Mm-hmm. And I would say by any standards, it's, let's just, I don't even know what to qualify it as, but it's abnormal behavior compared to, let's say, the basic society. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how does somebody reconcile that? I mean, whether you're the person on the outside going, man, that's really strange. Somebody thinks they're a dog. And I mean, I think I saw a video where these two people were walking around with two people walking like dogs. And so so for them to say, now, obviously I'm bringing up an extreme situation, but we can pull it back to some of the things like transgenders or some of these other sorts of things that maybe they believe that's their authentic self, but is it society's fault that they can't be that way or feel that way? That's a tricky scenario, I think, because society goes, I'm not here to judge people, but pretending you're a dog doesn't seem sane. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's what the average person might think.
Yeah. The dog, definitely an extreme version.
Extreme version. That.
Mm-hmm. but then, like, so in the work I do, what we do is it's this critical consciousness, this critical nature now we have on society, especially so when you talk about, you know, it being abnormal. Now,
right.
How we've been conditioned and what we know now, most of us can say, like, yeah, this is probably abnormal. But then again, when you think about the conditioning of society, it's still that question of, well, what's normal? Who made those rules?
Yeah.
Right? How do we know? We know, in quotation marks, because what we've all been conditioned to now, right, living in society. But when you think back to a lot of these social norms, what gender it's okay to be and all those different complicated nuances, it is that question of, well, according to who? Because if we think about years and years and years and how our nation was founded, right, we have one group of people making all these rules, right? Mm-hmm. Even in our field too, you know, we have obviously mental health disorders, we have this big DSM which tells us all these diagnoses, and a lot of times we're challenging that because it's like, well, who's naming what's abnormal behavior or not? Especially when you add culture into that, what's normal in one culture might not be normal in another, but who's to say, like, what culture wins, right? And unfortunately, what we do here in this westernized culture is we kind of have this idea that our standards, our culture, what we believe, what we think is right, is superior to others, right? But I can look at, well, on the other side of the globe, they're doing things a little differently, right? Mm-hmm. But who's to say that's inferior to us? And so it's very nuanced, right? But it's this idea of like this ethnocentric, right? monoculturalism, where it's like, this is what's right. We want everyone to follow this. And this is why we have to be critically aware of ourselves. This is where self comes in, of like, have I just been giving into that, right?
Yeah.
Society wants us to just, hey, these are the rules, regulations. This is what's normal. Follow this. Don't deviate. Put your head down. Don't question anything, right? And that doesn't even give space for us to be our authentic self.
That's interesting, because as you're saying that, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so, boy, authenticity can be complicated, can it? Because on the one hand, I'll speak for myself. I do want to be myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be myself. I want to speak as I think, more or less. You know, I think I have senses not to say, like, really dumb stuff out there in the wrong crowd at the wrong time. So on the one hand, I strive to be authentic, that who you're looking at right now, this is what I am, you know, 99% of the time. I'm going to say 90% of the time, 95%. But on the other hand, I also want to fit in. I want to get along with people. I want to, you know, I'm not going to, you know, act abnormal in public, whatever I consider abnormal. So it can be a real challenge for people that are struggling with, one, trying to fit in, but two, still trying to be their authentic self. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, definitely a big challenge. And not only are we wanting to fit in, we're actually needing that belonging.
Oh, very interesting.
Some of these core things, there's not a ton we need outside of the essentials, right? The food, shelter, you go up the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. But this sense of belonging, love, and connection, it's a huge need. A lot of people brush it off a little of like, I'm an introvert, right? I'm fine sticking to myself to some extent, right? But be, you know, locked up, it's just you in a room for months and months, years and years. Hey, we saw that with COVID. A lot of us weren't doing well.
Yeah, it didn't handle that well.
Connections, got taken. So we need a sense of love and belonging. And like you were speaking to, that can be a challenge. So it's like, okay, I need to feel that I belong to some group. I want to feel like I belong in society. And society tells me this is who I should be, right? So now there's this gap of, what do I do? Right?
Because
that sense of not belonging, rejection, that's difficult to handle. But then that sense of not being true to who I am, such a huge internal conflict for people. That peace is disrupted. That's when you see a lot of these like mental health issues coming in. People feeling like their only out is by taking their life. These extreme things because of this inner turmoil. And so, like you said, it's layered. It's tricky. Where do we find the middle ground of feeling that we belong, especially belonging in our true authentic self?
Wow. That's crazy. You know, those ideas. And again, I don't know, you know, I can only judge by my experience that, who is struggling with these things internally. But I think we're probably here talking about maybe the average person just trying to live a little more authentically, perhaps to the points that you have brought up and about this idea that, you know, it's maybe not to the, you know, to a fault, you know, but at the same time, you know, I need to feel, like you said, you know, love. I need to feel like I'm belonged. I need to love myself, and to love myself, I have to feel like I'm being authentic, because if this is not my authentic me, I don't know that I love that person. So what is authentic? You know, it's very interesting. You wrote somewhere, I don't recall if I read it in, you know, and I know you have some wonderful workbooks online too that we should tell people about before we finish, but you wrote somewhere, it says, and I'm going to read it for you. It says, I know this is an author's panic button right here. Do I remember what I wrote? You wrote, it says, I firmly believe that we all possess unique strengths and positive qualities that enable us to overcome the challenges we face. However, identifying these strengths can be difficult. Mm-hmm. Why is it difficult? And then how do people do these sorts of things? Mm-hmm. Why is it difficult to identify your strengths? What gets in the way of doing that?
Yeah. And kind of going back to that core belief that most of us have. So one, that'll be something good for individuals to think about. What is my true core belief? If you're honest with yourself, what's your core belief? It's just that true running thought, story of self. Where did that come from? Most of us do have that negative core belief. And so when you're operating from that negative core belief, if I'm gonna ask you, what are your strengths? It's always the same answer I get from most people. Strengths, like, I don't know. It's like this really long process to think about. And there's probably a lot of different reasons to that, but I attribute it, part of it to, you know, if we're operating from that negative core belief and negative thoughts about self, trying to pull now from strengths, it's like, I'm not even in tune with that. I'm attuned to my weaknesses, though. I can ask people, well, what areas do you want to improve? What are your weaknesses? Oh, they can list out a long list of those, right?
Yes.
And so, one, you have to challenge that core belief, because once you start having this positive narrative of self that I am lovable, I am worthy, I am deserving of good things, now you can identify more with strengths of like, and this is why that's true. So that can be a barrier to identifying our strengths. And if you think about it, I just don't think we're spending enough time reflecting on our strengths, right? It's kind of that cliche thing of we can get 25 positive reviews, compliments. It only takes that one negative in the mix, and that's all we think about, right? So it's almost how our brains operate, where we're not even in tune with our strengths. We're not even spending time in our days thinking like, I'm actually proud of myself for that. Like, yeah, I reached that goal, right? We're not even sitting in that. We're too busy focused on, okay, well, what's next? I need more, right? This isn't enough to feel worthy. So I would encourage individuals to really start tapping into strengths. I'll tell my clients, you know, not everyone's a big journaler, but it doesn't even require a lot of journaling or time, but you can do it on your phone, notebook. Each day, write one thing that you're proud about for yourself. It can be a big thing, and it can be the smallest of things. Sometimes just getting out of bed in the morning is a huge accomplishment for individuals. Own that. Honor that. I'm proud I got out of bed today. I'm proud I made it to work on time. I'm always late, right? I'm proud I made it to work. I'm proud I showed restraint with that coworker because I wanted to just rip them a new one, right? Small things. Because once you're able to identify things that you're proud of yourself about, then you're able to kind of match that with some strengths of like, you know, I actually am more patient than I realized.
Very interesting.
Like, I actually am more compassionate to others than I realize. I'm giving, right? I'm open to taking care of self. Oh, we just don't spend enough time in that area.
So then it sounds like you're suggesting that if one journals, and again, it's, you know, there are those, my wife is a prolific journaler. Listen, I'm not kidding you. I promise you I could bring her in my office right now and say, Jane, can you tell me what was happening this day? First of all, she recalls it most of the time, but if she doesn't, she says, give me a second. She'll go look at her journal. And it blows my mind what she journals about. And what I've understood from her as a person who journals is that, and I think I just heard you say this, is that you may be journaling these small, seemingly inconsequential things, but over time you start to see themes that qualify as a strength. Like you just said, you know, I'm looking back on my journal for the last 2 weeks and I've, in some form or fashion, exhibited patience. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a strength. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Might we submit that's part of their authentic them then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Those core qualities that we have, that's your authentic self. And this is a whole other realm. I can be short with this, but
please,
what you're grounded and rooted in. I always use that visualization of a tree, right? Your authentic self and more so your worth. It's grounded in the roots of the tree in a trunk. Most of these trees, some have the potential to, you know, get uprooted and fall over. But when we really think about a tree, you know, they're grounded. Many are hundreds and hundreds of years old. They're not falling down. That's your authentic self. It's those qualities, those strengths that really ground you with who you are. No one can take that away from you. None of us are able to go out and try to dig up roots and take it off the tree. Like, no one can take that away from you. But what we do is we think our authenticity and more so our worth is almost on these branches of the tree, right? Hmm. Like, oh, this is actually who I am. These are the roles I'm in. This makes me who I am in my authentic self. But what happens to branches of the tree? Those things can easily fall off, right? If the wrong season comes in, the wrong storm, life happens, branches might fall off. And so what's dangerous about placing who we are and our worth on those branches in is once it does fall off, a lot of us are now left with, well, who am I?
Right. Oh,
I just lost I just lost my job. So I thought that was really my authentic self. I thought that was really my worth. And now I just lost my job. So like, who am I? Right. I've been a parent and now kids have launched. They're in college. They're living on their own. So now I feel that branch has fallen. So who am I outside of being a parent now, right? And so all these life roles and transitions happen and we think we have a grasp on like who we are and our authentic self, but these things start to change. And so with all those changes, relationships come and go. Are you so grounded in who you are and those roots? And so that will be something important for individuals to reflect on. Anything you're naming that's like who I am, make sure it's nothing that anyone can take. But when I ask that question to individuals, they start naming, oh, I'm a mom, this is mm-hmm. my job, I'm a wife. I always validate those are amazing roles you're in.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, none of those things define who you are to the core because they can shift.
They can shift. You know, that's very interesting. Ooh, you just opened up a big can of worms here. So that what you're just describing, you know, can happen very innocently. For instance, I spent 20 years in the Air Force, and you know, and there's Air Force bases out in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about the military life, it's a very strict culture. Not just a strict culture, it's a very different culture than anything else. And the more interesting factor about my being in the Air Force for 20 years and my wife was in the Air Force for 10 years, I grew up in the military lifestyle. So my dad was in the military. So pretty much the first 40 years of my life was military oriented in some form or fashion. I get out of the Air Force. And so I'll really reflect more on my time in the Air Force. I didn't think about it. But when I got out, I suddenly, over some period of time, I went, you know, nobody cares what rank I was in the military. When I was in the military, when I showed up and you saw my rank and you were very low ranking or something, it meant something. You stood up. I was an enlisted guy. So, you know, the number of stripes on my sleeve, I didn't ever see myself in that fashion. I was not sort of like this brown nose, you know, hardcore, you know, master sergeant. I was really pretty relaxed. I didn't personally identify myself as, you know, a master sergeant. It wasn't just my nature. But after I got out is when I realized, man, who am I? I mean, I was like, I'm not a master sergeant. Nobody cares what I've done over the last 20 years. Nobody even can understand most of it. And so now what? And so, boy, talk about authentic me. But now you bring up this idea, what I've heard Dr. Stephen Covey talk about, the late, great Stephen Covey talk about, and he always talked about living a principle-centered life, mm-hmm. living life based on universal principles such as love and integrity and character and kindness and these sorts of things, which you can control. And to your point, he would bring up the idea of money. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be filthy rich one day. People love you. They're after you. You can attract as many people as you want based on the money and all the things that the money, you know, you're on social media showing up in Austria one day and, you know, you're in the Philippines the next month. Oh my, look at Kevin. And then something happens and the money's gone. Then what? Right? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. What we were attaching our worth and value to, right?
Yeah.
Has now disappeared. Then we start to question, oh, what's my value to people now?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't want to think that because it's this belief, our authentic being and our worth, it's this belief that we always have value. I don't care who you are, what you do, what you've done.
Yeah.
We all always aren't operating on the best behaviors. But you still have value also. Even taking it back to Joe, right? I might not value having someone like Joe in my life.
Yeah.
That's not saying he doesn't have value, right? Two completely different things. But a lot of times we internalize, goodness, why was I in that relationship in the past? Why did I engage in that? Why did I do this thing? Because I did all those bad things, now I'm a bad person. I have no value. Who wants to be with me? Who wants to engage in relation with me? No, we can do some bad behaviors, but we're still valuable people.
Yeah.
We just lose sight of that.
Yeah. Wow. That is so powerful. So just a couple more questions here. One, do you have some... I, like you, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist, if you will. I've studied a lot of it, but in any event, enough that I understand what you've already previously said, and that is that so much of our being seems to be created when we're small, when we're growing up and we're influenced, and that gets deeply ingrained in us. Let me ask, first of all, can you give some advice to parents who have young kids that you believe would help them help their children at a young age become, I don't know how to say this, to develop their authentic self? I mean, mm-hmm. to follow that path, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure the proper terminology to assign to that, but mm-hmm. I think you get what I'm saying. What can you tell a parent to do?
Yeah, definitely. I know that can be difficult. And I guess to make it simple, if you can even just remember these three things, and we've discussed all of these, but it's these three human needs that we have. And if you think about it, if we can start getting these things early in childhood, it's kind of a game changer and a life changer for a lot of us. So think about that safety, okay? Just creating that safe environment. That safety also requires an emotional safety. Are kids able to express themselves to you without feeling that criticism, that judgment? Treat it as if, what would that safety look like for you right now as an adult? Mm-hmm. It's still going to be the same for kids. I don't care the age. Kids need that safety. And when you think about the safety, it's the emotional safety, right? They can be vulnerable. That has nothing to do with what you're providing them with, what you're doing. All that stuff is nice, right? Kids are a little spoiled now. They want the mm-hmm. new iPhone, the mm-hmm. tablet, iPad, all these things. But if you think about it, if you can't provide all that, that's okay. Are you providing
yes.
that safety? Okay. So don't start beating yourself up for I need to give them more. No, safety is one. Okay. And then that love and belonging, okay? I know it sounds simple. Of course I give my kids love, right? But really challenging, what does that yeah. love look like in our household? Is it expressed? Is it shown in vulnerable ways? That belonging, am I setting up an environment where my kids feel they belong? Or, if they do something wrong, maybe something I deem as that's not normal for you to do, am I coming down on them hard? Am I giving them space to explore the world, right? Really explore what's around them? Or am I wanting things to be so perfect in particular where now it's threatening their sense of belonging and what's okay to do? So can be nuanced, wow. but safety, love, and belonging, start there, right? And I think as adults, because it really doesn't change, and that's why these can be easy to start with, because most adults, we still need that, right? And so from childhood, adolescent, teenage, adulthood, that does not change. We always need those three things for sure.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that, we're a little bit back to Dr. Covey's work. I'm using the only one. I mean, these are principles in the Bible as well. I think Jesus spoke very loudly about what the new commandments are. And there seems to be, I'm thinking about the parent that is almost you know, that their life was so hard that almost incapable of showing love or showing kindness or, you know, safety to them is something completely different, you know, but that's probably a whole another conversation there. And so let me just ask finally then, Vanessa, really two more questions, but one, you know, where does someone start? Where do you know, let's just say that you're, you know, there's the average person that's listening right now is, you know, they're fairly settled in their life, but they don't feel like they are living their authentic self. Maybe they are in an environment where they're, you know, forced to think a certain way or behave a certain way. So not suggesting that you should completely defy that, because it might be necessary. I mean, you may have to dress a certain way. And, you know, I mean, I can't imagine in the military me showing up and saying, no, I ain't going to wear that uniform. It ain't me. That probably is not going to work out. So aside from that, I'm trying to bring us into the middle here for that average person just really trying to settle into a little bit more of who they are and what their authentic self is. And they're kind of asking themselves, maybe they're a little bit younger in life and trying to just sort these things out. You know, what would you advise them to, where would they start? I would say reading your book maybe might be a good place to start, but where else?
I think, you know, asking that super basic and foundational question we discuss, but it's one of the hardest questions we'll ever answer for ourselves. That question of who am I? Start with that. And first, just throw it out to yourself and see, well, what that initial process is like. When you first hear that, what first comes to mind? Like most of us, it's probably like, I haven't thought about that. Oh, okay, well, that's the start. We have to figure out who we even are before a lot of us are trying to jump to what we want to become and do and all these great things. But it's like, we don't even have that foundation of where are we starting from, right? What's the starting point? So being able to answer that question for yourself, and it might take some time, some fleshing through. Remember, it's not these roles that you're in. It's not the things you're doing, things that no one can take away from you. Okay? And so who are you? And don't get it confused with who you feel you're expected to be.
Wow.
So-and-so said you should be, right? Parents are maybe telling you, no, this is what you should do. Let's quiet the voices around us. If no one else had to say so, if society didn't matter, who are you? So that's a hard start, but
that is a hard start. But it's an interesting one, because you're right. And you did say start with the question, the very simple question. And I think you went on to say, and kind of see where that leads you. You got to start somewhere. And so maybe that's the perfect question to do that. Very interesting. Do you advocate people asking others, you know, what they see in them, you know?
Yeah, that's a good one. That can be huge, actually. Transformational, too. So one, you can even ask others, like, what their response. Sometimes I'll ask that question, and some have bounced it back to me. The first time that happened, I was taken aback. They're like, well, how would you answer that? Who are you? And even me, I was like, I'm like, oh, no one's ever.
I will admit, I was sitting there thinking I'm going to ask Vanessa just that question, but I won't.
What others are saying about themselves, just to get an idea, or it can validate that, like, okay, I'm not alone, like, on this journey of figuring that out. But yeah, to your point, that can be transformational, because again, we all have this negative core belief, most of us, in this running narrative, and we hold that with, like, we think it's 100% true. And so asking someone, how do you perceive me? How would you describe me? The things we get back from people, a lot of us are shocked. Like, huh, me? Like, you
really?
You think that?
You think I'm smart?
Like, yeah.
No, really. I mean, people sometimes will do that. They'll say, I just don't see myself as somebody smart. But people around me have asked, and they think I'm really smart, and they're surprised.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So that can be a nice thing to do.
Uh-huh. So let me ask one last question, and then I'm going to ask you where everybody can find your information and so forth. Is there anything else maybe that you would like to tell our audience that I haven't asked a question about, or, you know, just anything at all? I mean, no is fine, but if there's something that you think is you would like to convey to our audience about being your authentic self or any of these other sorts of things, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, you know, it's thrown around so much in society now, like you said, be who you are, authenticity. It's almost starts to lose its power of like, okay, we're all just supposed to be authentic now. So seeing it as, and you know, for the book that's called Authentic, it's a acronym. So it takes you from the A all the way to the C. The C, I'll give a little spoiler. The C is for continuous journey. And I just want to validate that our authenticity, it's not, okay, let me name who I am, figure that out, and then tomorrow I'm authentic. You know, all the work I do around authenticity, writing about it, I'm still on this journey. There's plenty of times where I still feel there's a threat to my authentic self. Can I be my authentic self here? I feel like my sense of worth, shame is still threatened. And so it's this continuous journey, and on your journey, you're going to need that self-compassion to self. That same compassion you give out to everyone else, you need it also for yourself, because it's a difficult journey, right? You're still going to question yourself. You're still going to question your value. You're still going to make mistakes. You're not going to be perfect. And so you need a reminder of like,
grace.
Okay. Like, yeah, like I'm still doing okay. I'm still, despite what I just did yesterday, that why did I go back and revert to that? Yeah. I still have value today.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a journey.
Yes. Boy, that's good. That's really good. And I couldn't agree with you more that, and it's not easy for a lot of people. And I would even say for myself sometimes, just saying, you know, okay, Kevin, you really screwed up. I mean, that was, what you said was awful. Okay, go apologize and show yourself some grace too. You know, you're feeling it. So, wow, this is so stimulating, so inspiring to talk to you, Vanessa. Would you please tell the audience, those listening and watching, where they can find your work, where they can follow you, contact you, whatever the case might be.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks again for having me. Such an amazing conversation. So definitely stay connected for the listeners. We talked a lot about how society can operate. We need connection more than ever. So definitely reach out. You can find me at my website, drvanessaroberts.com. And it'll just be the DR and then Vanessa Roberts. And that'll be the same for Instagram, at drvanessaroberts. Same. Facebook also. And then the books that Kevin mentioned are Authentic and The Pursuit Toward Liberation. Those are both on Amazon if you want to check those out. Podcast, All Things Authentic.
That's right,
Having some, you know, authentic conversations really around various topics. So you can find that on any of your favorite listening platforms.
I have watched some episodes, and it's a great podcast. You do a great job at that.
Thank
and
you.
Some really good ideas. I also know that on your website where you can find your books, or they can find your books, but I also noticed there's some workbooks there. I can't recall exactly what they were, but I downloaded one of them. Remind the audience what they might be and you know if you know what how they can use them or benefit from them.
Yeah, they were some quick little free workbooks for you. I think it's like PDF, right? It's been a little while now, so I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What
actually, I'm going to look right here. No, I'm going to look right here. Yeah, Living Authentically Worth Workbook. I mean, there you have it. And then Barriers to Authenticity Checklist. My goodness.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the checklist is good too, even if you want to start with that. Because we do get that question of like, well, how do I know if I'm being authentic or not? A quick checklist really just to assess like, okay, I'm checking off a lot of these things. So yeah, so all that gears to authenticity. It's a free resource for you. So that can be a good start too.
Okay. Well, Dr. Vanessa Roberts, thank you so much. You've been a great guest. And I'm certain that people listening to this right now are going to take away some really nice gifts that, you know, as my wife likes to say, you know, gifts for a lifetime, this sort of wisdom and knowledge and skills, tools that you've offered. So thank you so much for being on Grow Yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure.